Hi, you're listening to your Route to Wellbeing podcast. This podcast shares strategies, insights, nuggets, and tools to inspire and support you as you step boldly towards creating the well-being that you desire and deserve. Each week, I share insights and inspiration from different people who have expertise across one or more of the 11 domains of well-being. Each one of the guests that I've chosen to talk to have found the clues through their lives and experiences, through their careers and their knowledge, that I want you to have access to. My big question is, how can we all pulse with energy and truly live while we're alive? I believe that these people that I'm talking to have some of the crucial answers. So relax, listen up, and thank you for tuning in. Please remember to leave us a review and also to share this podcast with anyone in your network who you think it may help. Hi, I'm Sue Fullergood and I am your host for your Route to Wellbeing podcast. And I'm very excited to have with me here my friend and colleague and coach, Julia Kerr-Henkel, who is the Managing Director of Luminos Coaching, which is a full-service coaching and leadership development consultancy which is based in Johannesburg. Julia is a professional individual and team coach, a leadership development facilitator, trainer, and on top of that, a keynote speaker. She has studied directly with Brené Brown in Texas and is one of her certified Dare to Lead facilitators. Brené is best known for her work as a researcher and author of 6 New York Times best-selling books. She's a name we all know, and she's been studying for 24 years topics like courage, vulnerability, shame, empathy, emotional literacy, and resilience. So to have actually gone and studied with the big guru herself makes Julia a guru herself. Julia runs various in-person and virtual training programs for corporates, and she runs retreats which are based on the skill sets she's acquired over her long and illustrious career. On top of all of this, Julia is happily married and she has 2 adult stepchildren, which makes her have the right to speak because it's not jolly easy to be a stepmother. And she's the mom of 3 Maine Coon cats. Her hobbies, when she isn't working, is she loves to learn, to travel. She's a near dance guru. She loves to visit ancient civilizations, to be in nature, and she also loves quality conversations. And I can tell you, I've been at the receiving end or the contributing side of the table in many of these very fascinating, good quality conversations, because Julia and I have known each other for many, many years, having met on an Enneagram training program, I don't know how long ago, but in the dark ages, it feels like. So I really am very thrilled to chat to Julia today about the subject of personal mastery, because I'm absolutely certain that one of the 11 contributory factors to acquiring well-being and to manifesting well-being for yourself is to have a high level of personal mastery. And who better to share with us some hacks and tools and ideas and insights into this subject than Julia. So without further ado, I'm going to hand the microphone over to you, Jules, and I'm going to ask you to tell us a little bit about your career, your professional journey, and how you got to be the guru that you are today.
Oh, Sue, thank you so much. I really appreciate your enthusiasm and your appreciation for me just in the introduction. Parts of it, I'm like, I don't even recognize myself, but thank you. I'll take the compliments. I'm not sure I see myself as a guru, but if a guru is meant a teacher and somebody that's on the path, then yes, okay, I'll take on that title. So I started my, you know, career journey almost by accident. I'd studied European languages and psychology at university, decided to take a gap year in the UK, as many people do, being South African, and landed up living there for 4 years working in investment banking. Not that I knew anything about investment banking or equity research, but I had this language and communication skill. So I worked in the European luxury goods team. And in the year 2000, you'll remember when the world was coming to an end and there was the Y2K anticipation. I thought I'd rather be close to home for that action, and I moved back to South Africa in the year 2000. And I thought I'd be here for 1 year, and then I was going to go back to the UK. And clearly, that wasn't part of the plan because I've been here now 24 years and have absolutely no interest in leaving South Africa, despite all its challenges. I feel I have a much greater contribution to make here. And my career followed a path that at first felt quite dry, but I was sort of intuitively sort of following the steps. So I'd come from investment banking, so I worked in investor relations and a financial PR company where we listed Massmart, we unbundled Iscor, I worked on a number of FMCG clients. And I realized that after some time that this kind of dryness, it was like, this is really not necessarily feeding my soul. And I could feel myself feeling a bit out of my depth. And I started looking for something else. And it was then that I went and worked for quite a large PR agency. And I worked on one of their biggest financial services client accounts. And I was there for 5 years. And this was my first experience of leadership, in that I had been a really driven, Enneagram type three achiever, individual contributor. And what you would know happens to people like that is that they then get given more and more responsibilities. I think there's a term for this, performer punishment. And I got given a team, and I knew nothing about leadership, and I'd never done any training. The idea of coaching was not a thing in the early 2000s. Anyway, I kind of hacked my way in quite a messy way when I look back at it now through having quite a big team of people. What I systematically ignored, though, was my own burnout. So very, very demanding client, quite a big team of people I was managing, and I ignored all the signs of my body. So you'd be one of the first people to know the saying, your body speaks first, it never lies, and it keeps score. And like I say, I didn't have a language for listening to my body. And so instead, what would happen, I would just consistently get really, really ill from the amount of stress and, of course, the languaging that I was using around not coping. Like, if you're going to be senior, if you're going to be strategic, if you're going to be successful, you can't be dealing this level of stress and not be coping. So I had a lot of a shame narrative around, just even being unwell. So because the body keeps score and it always wins, I'd had a number of episodes of burnout. But eventually, what happened after 5 years is I got a rare eye virus. It came about quite suddenly. I was quarantined in my home for 2 weeks. I had my eyes bandaged up. I was told I was contagious. So, people, small children, and pets couldn't be anywhere near me. It all sounded very dramatic. But what that led to was literally 2 weeks of dark nights of the soul. I had gone to a Catholic convent. So all those hymns started coming to me. And I thought, why is it that my eyes are being affected? And I'd had some exposure to the incredible Louise Hay's work. And I thought, what is it that I'm not seeing in this situation? And what happened is that I couldn't do what I would normally have done when I was burning out, which was I'd have meetings in my bedroom. I'd be doing emails from my bed. I would be checking myself into hospital for a drip on a Friday night and a Saturday, and then go back to work on Sunday and be back at work on Monday with nobody knowing any wiser. And none of which is recommended, right?
Hardly recommended.
It's where the name of my company comes from. It's called Luminos because after those 2 weeks, I really feel like I had a revelation. And I thought, what is it that I have been contributing to the situation, and what is it that my body is screaming at me? And it felt like a combination of craziness as well as now I know deep courage, because in that moment, I knew that there were a number of things that had to change. I no longer wanted to work for this organization doing the kind of work which, while necessary for society, it was like I couldn't sell another credit card to students on campus who probably couldn't afford to pay it back. I didn't want to feel this endless strain of trying to win the next award or be as good as my last project. And I also had to come to terms with the fact that the organization I was working with seemed to have a very different moral and ethical compass to me. There'd been a number of scenarios that had taken place which really led me to question the integrities and the values match. And also, just on a personal note, I was in quite a messy long distance relationship with somebody. And I realized I was kind of hoping that they would say, come and join me overseas, and then I could resign. And I'm like, hold on, that's the really wrong reason to go into a major life, decision and relationship, right? So what that all led to, just in a nutshell, was me resigning, giving my 3 months' notice because I was a director, and really not knowing what was to come next. And what happened in those 3 months was a process that began then of like deep excavation. You and I both know, and all your listeners would know, that personal development is not a quick, easy workshop. Weekend in and out, boom, I'm changed. It feels like taking a jackhammer with all the noise and mess and dirt and like just digging, right? And keep going. But I started being coached and started doing a lot of personal reflection, reading books, doing whatever courses and things I could, afford at the time. And to cut a long story short, very shortly after I'd actually left this organization that I'd been working for, things just opened up for me. And people started asking me to consult with them, which was a great alternative for me while I was trying to figure out what I wanted to do. And I could manage my time, my energy. And that's what got me into doing a lot more sort of change management, communications, consulting, while I was building up my own coaching practice and studies. So Luminos means to guide the way. It's the light. And I'm very grateful for the fact that, my eyesight was affected because I had to really look into the dark places and go, where do I need to move in order to find more light and joy and satisfaction and meaning and purpose in my life? And I believe that is my vocation now as a coach and as a facilitator, to help people find their own way. And I believe that the guiding light in all of us is our values.
Well, thank you for sharing that story and being so frank about the challenges that you faced in that time of your life. And thank God you found your way. And I love that your guide was your body, because that's, what I really stand for. So I really would love to understand, after all that investigation and challenge and all that that got you to the place of going into coaching, what do you believe personal mastery actually is? Maybe I should start by sharing what I think it is, and then we can juxtapose your view against mine. I think that personal mastery is about understanding and knowing all the parts of yourself and being okay with all of them. And then beyond that, using all the parts of you, even the ones that are a little bit less developed and a little bit less comfortable to use, bringing them into your repertoire, if you like, and using them as well as your more familiar ones, parts of you, to live your purpose. And beyond that, to experience joy in the adventure of being alive.
I love it too. And
So that's a bit of a long-winded answer, but
no, not at all. But what I love about it is the word that kept coming up for me when you were speaking was integration. And I'm like a, because I love words and languages, and I love to look at the sort of root of words. And the root of the word integration comes from Latin integrare, which, when you look at what does that mean, it's about bringing together and making whole. And bringing together and making whole all parts of ourselves. So for me, that's our, you know, it's our body and our behavior that stems from our actions. It's our cognitive side, our thoughts, our beliefs, and of course, then our emotions. So to bring all of those together kind of brings, I think, a human being to life in some way. And when I say whole, I don't mean perfection. And I love
Love.
what you said. It's about and being okay. Yeah, because sometimes, not even sometimes, I know even for myself today, despite the story I've told, is that the relationship I have with my body sometimes doesn't feel like a partnership or an ally. It feels like we're at some kind of odds with each other, you know. So I'm constantly having to come into okayness, you know, with my body, especially now as I'm aging. You know, I just turned 50 last month, so you know, it's like there's a different relationship being formed here. So thank you for yours. I think, you know, what I would say is let's maybe just discuss what perhaps personal self-mastery is not. And I've started to speak to that, is that I don't believe it's a destination, you know, like there's some ultimate end point that we arrive at, you know. So there isn't a linear, we start here and we end there. I think it's a lifelong process and cycle. I also believe it's not technically about being a master. I sometimes see that word mastery and it sort of gives me a bit of a shiver, because it's not about implying some kind of state of superiority. I've achieved personal self-mastery. You know, where are you in the rankings? And it's also not about an ideal, because we are deeply flawed and awesome people. I call it flawsome. And I think part of also my burnout issues, and for many of us, is this belief that we have to be perfect. Because we ultimately wanting to avoid criticism and judgment. And I think that puts huge pressure on all of us. So I don't believe self-mastery is a destination, and I don't believe it's necessarily about living into some kind of impossible ideal. So my understanding of it is that it's a continuous rinse, repeat, rise, fall, and rise again cycle. And through that process, which can sometimes be really painful, but involves learning, we come to awareness of ourselves. We can build knowledge, we can develop skills and strategies. And as we do that, guess what? New awarenesses open up to us. And then we've got to build more skills, build more, you know, ability to, you know, to course correct. So I also believe it's about lifelong learning and that commitment to invest the time and effort into this. Because many people might go, well, you know, this is who I am, like it or lump it. You know, I've got to X position in my life. I'm deemed successful by whatever standards they're using. Why do I need to do this, you know, hard work of self-awareness and development? And of course, that's a choice, but I think it's limiting. So for me, there are four key areas. And I think the good news is these are all skills-based, so everyone can learn them. Is one, self-awareness, two, self-exploration, three, self-understanding and course correction, and four, as you said as well, self-compassion. That's the okayness we were talking about.
Wow, thank you for sharing that. And there's just a few things that I'd love to highlight and parse out there. First of all, the way you talked about integration, you know, coming to wholeness is really what healing is about for me. So, thank you for making self-mastery actually about healing, because that ties the whole thing together. And then I really buy into your pointing out that self-mastery and personal mastery is not about a destination, that there is really nowhere to get to. And I smiled when you said that because I was thinking that if there really is anything to get to, it really is the grave, because it's only when you finish the journey that that you're really done with the learning and that you've really probably come to know yourself best. And you probably your life will be over when you've got to the stage of having done your purpose and known yourself fully and you're ready to leave. I just think it's such an important thing to have raised for us that it's not a destination and that we are on a journey towards greater mastery, but that doesn't mean perfection. That means
Learning.
understanding, yeah,
Yeah.
and compassion. And I also found it really brilliant that you put in number three in your list of four things that made up personal mastery. And number three was reflection, because I think so often people are so busy that maybe they do the self-mastery work and they do understand themselves and they do explore and come with compassion, but they forget to reflect and to look back on what worked and what didn't and see, see themselves sort of in the mirror and from a future to past perspective or present to past perspective, I should say. So thank you for really raising those important things. Can you talk more about each one individually? Because I think there's so much in each one of those subjects that you've raised there. And I'm sure our listeners would like to sort of have some examples and really understand these aspects of self-mastery better.
So this is open to challenge, but this is certainly what my experience has been, right? So if we take the first of the four areas, which is self-awareness, in a nutshell, what is that? It's about coming to some kind of awakening moment that typically has a message of something needs to change. Now, this could be a million and one things, right? There was me lying in my home bed, really, really in a deep, dark place. And I was like, something's got to change in my work, in my relationship, in my body. There's something not fundamentally working here. But for other people, it could be something which might involve, like, I want better relationships with my colleagues. I want to experience less anxiety when receiving feedback. I want to be brave enough to have the tough conversations I've been avoiding. I want to have less reactivity when I'm with certain family members or staff members or whatever it is, and this idea of my buttons get pushed and I lose it, So I think self-awareness is really about getting clear around what do I want and what don't I want. And as humans, we're quite binary, Sue, and you maybe know this from your body work, is that we want to move towards pleasure and we want to avoid pain. And I don't just mean physical pain, but like mental pain in my book would be boredom. So this idea of what is creating some kind of pain or threat for you? And what are you wanting more of that leads to joy or desire or pleasure? So, if you can start to really articulate, I think you start to get a sense of, okay, where am I at in relationship to those things? So, self-awareness is often this awakening. And this can happen just from your own internal processing of reflection, as you mentioned, or it gets brought to your attention, like something happens to you. And unfortunately, with a lot of people I see, it's often illness, disease, accident, really bad feedback. Somebody's coming out of the blue and saying, I no longer love you, I want a divorce. And or getting retrenched out of the blue. I'm not saying any of these things are, that we deserve them, but this is what happens. So you and I would know from some of the Enneagram work, these are some of those wake-up calls or those red flag events that happen. Are we paying attention to them? So something's got to change is the first one, self-awareness. The second is self-exploration. And here I like to sort of imagine like zooming in on a photograph on your phone, you know, like you really kind of get quite granular. And what I mean by that is kind of really zooming into what is happening for me at all three domains. So, what is happening for me in my emotions? Many, many people think, oh, our thoughts lead to our emotions, which lead to our actions. They don't. And a lot of Brené's research for, you know, her last book, Atlas of the Heart, has demonstrated with over 400,000 pieces of data that we are emotional beings first. You on occasion think. So this idea of our emotions are the fuel that move us. So can I get curious about emotions? Like lean in, like why am I feeling this level of frustration? Why am I feeling this overwhelm? Why am I feeling this anxiety? And is it really anxiety or is it anticipation? Why am I feeling joy? Why do I even want joy? What is it? You know, do I have that felt experience? So the one side is just getting curious about whatever emotion is showing up for you. The invitation there, I was about to say the tricky thing is, but I don't think it's difficult. I just think it requires some learning, is do I have a language for emotions? Do I have literacy? In other words, if I was wanting to learn Mandarin, well, flip, I'd have to learn the A to Z, if that is such a thing in Mandarin. I'd have to learn how this alphabet works and what combinations of characters make language. Same with emotions. And there's so many beautiful tools out there that help us to go, what am I feeling? Oh, right, it's this emotion. So getting curious about our emotions, too, what's going on in my body? And we don't need to be body practitioner experts like yourself to get that. We just look at what am I sensing? What am I feeling? I'm feeling lower back pain. I'm noticing I get headaches often. I'm noticing that I'm getting tightness in my shoulders. I'm noticing actually I'm eating, but actually maybe I'm just thirsty. So really getting a sense of that in connection also to the emotion. And I'll give you an example of putting these things together now. And then of course, what's going on in my thoughts? What language am I using to shape my reality? I'm saying everything's, you know, awful and, you know, this country's going to hell in a handbasket. And as I'm saying that, I can feel tension in my shoulders and a tightness in my diaphragm. And I can feel, you know, heat coming on my face. Well, yeah, I'm really working myself up based on that belief. And of course, then actions and the behavior. What's going on? Can I get curious about why is it? Why is it that I always overcommit? Why is it that I'm always feeling exhausted and on the verge of burnout? And I just can't seem to say no when a client finds me, for example. So this kind of really zooming in on what's happening for me. And again, that just requires questioning. Paying a bit of time and attention. And it doesn't need to take time. I don't need to sit and journal for 4 hours or meditate for an hour. I could be going on my walk. I could be getting dinner ready and I could just be musing on these things, getting curious about it. The third one is self-understanding and course correction. You know, knowing what you do and why you do it with this reflection piece, as well as being able to take feedback. You know, and again, feedback is either seen as a gift, something that I can really work with, or it's seen as something that we are nervous about receiving because, of course, we're afraid of getting criticized or judged, or something being held up to us, which is really uncomfortable. So I say, welcome the feedback, ask for it. And one of the things that I've done is to, you know, is to be part of a women's circle where we are quite robust with each other after having built a lot of trust, to give each other feedback around how are we showing up. I work with a coach. It was one of the things I contracted with her. She lives in Belgium. I've never met her, but I'm like, I want you to give me feedback as to how are you experiencing me. And not because I'm sort of fishing for compliments, although feedback can also be the positive stuff, but it's like we live our lives from the inside out. So sometimes I can't see or hear or even experience myself. I need that feedback. And then lastly, and I'm sorry this is taking time, is the self-compassion piece, which is, and here I lean very heavily on the work of a fantastic researcher, also based in Texas, called Kristen Neff. And her work on mindful self-compassion is really worth looking into. Amazing resources. And her definition of self-compassion is about speaking to and treating yourself as you would a dear friend, someone you admire and respect and care for. And let's face it, do we really treat and speak to ourselves like we would a warm dear friend? And the answer is often no. So if I'm on a committed path to invest in myself and my personal self-mastery, it's not just about driving myself into the ground. It's also about learning from the times when I get it wrong, when I mess up, when I am reactive, when I am, unprofessional, unskillful in some way. And to go, okay, hold on. Whew. This is difficult. That was a disappointing response. I'm pretty sure many people also experience moments of unskillfulness and being unprofessional, and this will pass. What's going on, Julia? So you can hear the three components of self-compassion, which I think you'll love. Sue, is mindfulness. What's going on for me while it's going on, right? I'm feeling shame, I'm feeling regret, I'm feeling resignation, I'm feeling overwhelmed. That's the mindfulness piece, is to be able to go, what is happening for me as I'm experiencing it? To connect with common humanity, is that I'm not alone in my suffering and my feeling of inadequacy. And third one is that, speaking to myself with self-kindness versus going, you're such a loser. You're supposed to be a coach. How could you be unprofessional, not be skillful? Surely you should know all the tools out there of, dealing the stuff. And I'm going, okay, wow. Yes, I know a lot of things, but I'm human.
Wow. I am really grateful for that. And I especially love that you brought up Kristen Neff, because I just obviously as a mindfulness practitioner just love her
Yes.
work. And I think the self-compassion component is so vital and so quickly forgotten, especially under self-mastery, because it seems like it's all about, being that ideal perfect person who never makes a mistake and who has no flaws. And so bringing our awareness to the self-compassion part seems to be such a helpful way to remind us that it's to meet ourselves as a human and as a friend. I love that.
Maybe
And
if I can jump in
sorry.
there, I apologize, is maybe just to offer your listeners something quite practical around self-compassion. I often encourage people to do this in my workshops, is to just take a piece of paper, draw a line down the middle, so you've got two columns, and on the one hand, think about a friend, a colleague, someone you know, a family member that you know is going through a difficult time. They're in some kind of struggle. And imagine that you were writing them a little letter. So if I know you were going through a difficult time, I would write, "Dear Sue." And then I'd tap into that empathy and what would I say to Sue knowing she's in struggle? And I'd say, "Dear Sue, so sorry to hear you're going through a difficult time. I hope that you're receiving the support that you need. If you require anything from me, I'm here for you." Whatever your words are. And then to really take a look at that. And then to think about a time when you're in struggle, or maybe you are in struggle, and to really be honest with yourself around what are the words you use to speak to yourself, and write those down. And often what will happen is people will say, wow, there's quite a big difference between column one and column two. So that's an interesting insight. And then the third part is to cross out the name of the person you would have shown empathy to. So in this case, I cross out Sue and I'd write Dear Julia. I'd read those words back to myself. That can also be quite a transforming moment for people because it's about saying, would I ever say to Sue, ah, come on, pull yourself together. We don't have time for this. You've got so much to do. Everyone struggles, just get on with it. Would you ever say that to your dear friend? No. Why would you say that to yourself? So it's just such a simple little exercise, but it seems to bring about a sort of like a visceral shift for people.
Yeah, it's very helpful and very illuminating to more that kind of clarity to that internal voice. I'm also very interested in what you expressed about under the self-exploration column about emotions, because I'm doing a lot of studying into somatic experiencing. I'm actually doing Peter Levine's work at the moment, and it's really interesting that Darwin, way back when, in I think it was 18 something, actually pointed out that emotions are what have enabled us to evolve and to adapt sufficiently to stay alive and to for our species to stay alive. And the human being is a very emotional organism, and it is the ability to feel emotion and respond to it that has kept us so adaptable and enabled us to be so adaptable. So, I just find that that gives us such a healthy respect for our emotions. And the other thing that really struck me as I started studying that work is that emotions are felt instantly as opposed to cognitions, which are much, much slower. So, our initial response to anything in our adaptive, protective brain's operation is to feel something, to feel an emotion, and to have an emotional response. And that's our first line of defense, actually, and our first way of staying protected in the world. So we need to have a healthy respect for our emotions and therefore tune into them, tune into the radio station of them, and understand them not just cognitively, but also somatically and viscerally.
I love that. And this idea that emotions are there to serve us. As you say, they've been part of our survival. And often people kind of roll their eyes, oh gosh, we're going to do emotional literacy work or agility work or emotional intelligence, whatever it's like. And the reason is often if you just say to people, what did you learn about emotions growing up? What messages did you receive about emotions? 99% of the time, they will tell you the following. They were dismissed. Unless it was the positive range of emotions, happy, excited, joyful, the rest needed to be shut down and locked away. That they were inconvenient, that they were disruptive, that they were unacceptable in some way, and of course painful or seen often quite genderized as crying, or even these days people say, let's not get emotional, with the finger marks. So when you think about it, it's like they've got this really bad rep. And often we go, I don't want to feel negative emotions and I only want to feel positive emotions. Well, emotions are neutral. They're not positive or negative. It's about how do they lead us to feel? And some have a greater density to them. And so I feel like there's a big reframing for emotions as these messengers which serve us. So when When I say lean in to get curious about emotions, I'm saying, like, first of all, what story are you telling yourself about this emotion? When this emotion shows up, what's its story? What's it telling you if it's a messenger? Second of all, like, where are you sensing it in your body? Because emotions are not happening out there in the atmosphere somewhere. They're happening in our bodies. What are you sensing? And then thirdly, what is their purpose? What are they trying to get you to be awake to? If we just say, oh, exactly. And so again, you might go, oh God, this is so nerdy, but why do I want to get up close? Well, if I have a regular experience of overwhelm, for example, what's the story of overwhelm? The story of that, when that emotion knocks on your door like a courier arriving to drop something off, it's there to tell you that there's a lot that you've probably got on your plate, and there's a need to prioritize. There's so much coming in, I can't assimilate it all. Two, how does that show up in your body? It might be a unique signature for each of you, but typically it's a feeling of contraction, feeling trapped. Oh my God, how am I going to fit this all in? Overcommitted. And then, how's it trying to serve you? Well, it's trying to point to something needs to shift, some kind of prioritizing. And of course, your body would be giving you messaging around, heat or, tightness or agitation, etc. And to then go, well, what is this, how's this emotion helpful? Is there an alternative that I can maybe induce, maybe even by shifting my body?
And if you can think about your burnout story, I mean, your overwhelm is protective against burnout. So if you
Yes.
could listen to the emotion, you wouldn't have to go through the suffering of burnout. If I could have listened to all the emotions that were going on in my frazzled state, perhaps I wouldn't have had to fall off a mountain, break all my bones, and damage all my organs because I could have heard what my body was trying to teach me and tell me long before that occurred.
Yeah. And then again, we're back into the cycle of personal self-mastery around what awareness is now awake to me that perhaps wasn't there before. So if I'm always experiencing this overwhelm and the burnout, as you say, I've realized that one of the things is I need to get more comfortable and as vulnerable as all hell with holding boundaries and saying no, or not right now when negotiating. So now that's opened up a whole new learning around those skills. Versus beating myself up because, oh my God, you've overcommitted and you're overwhelmed, and now I'm ratty to my husband and I'm sort of irritated when friends want to see me because I've got to work on the weekend. So it's adult stuff.
And if we come back to my little bit about experiencing joy, I just think when we allow ourselves to keep on over and over again having uncomfortable emotions like overwhelm, we diminish our joy. So it's like we're, pouring water over our own life force and over the joy that is our birthright.
And it doesn't have to go that way. So one thing I wanted to just say is what connects these things? So you've got these four components, and what's sort of the beating heart central to all of them? And you introduced me as doing Brené's work, and I've been doing this for 5 years now, and what's very key to me and very clear to me is that it's courage is at the heart of these core topics. And courage, how it's defined in the research, is this ability to what we call rumble with vulnerability. And there's a lot of myths around vulnerability, that it's weakness or it's oversharing or crying and demonstrating all your emotions in the workplace. It's not that. Courage is this ability to work with that feeling that we all experience when we're faced with uncertainty or risk or emotional exposure. Courage is that ability to still take action, to still show up in a skillful way when you can't control or predict the outcome. And so when I'm courageous, I may not know that next step, and it might feel really awkward, and I would rather not be feeling this discomfort, but I still take that next step, whatever that is for me, because I know that it's also the gateway to clarity, learning, connection, a hard conversation, etc. So I think if we're going to develop self-awareness, if we're going to explore, we're going to, understand ourselves and course correct and get feedback and ask for it and develop self-compassion, we need to be able to really lean into courage, which has this vulnerability at the core of it. And it's kind of like this really inconvenient truth. We all would rather feel brave, but not feeling this discomfort, but you don't get one without the other. So this is where I say it's like adulting work here, because we need to develop the courage and the skills there too. And we need to have this kind of what I call dogged tenacity to keep going and to keep doing these, different aspects that we've been mentioning with rigor. And I love the word rigor because it speaks to resilience and being deliberate and careful and persistent. So, this is what I think combines these things together.
So thank you for looping and linking it all together and joining the dots for us. But can you just take it one step further and help us to understand what can we hope to experience as the benefits for doing all this work and exposing ourselves to discomfort and why? What are we going to get from that?
So in this work, we use a word, a phrase called grounded confidence. And really what this concept means, this is around how do I get very clear on what is my foundation as a person, and how through practice do I build skill, which is the confidence piece. The only way we build confidence is through the doing, the reflection, and the the ability to try something new in a different way again. So grounded confidence basically speaks to how do I, well, sorry, let me just backtrack a bit. So you asked what are the benefits? So the benefits, I believe, is that you'd be able to build and live into some of the core concepts of grounded confidence. So what are those core concepts of grounded confidence, which are the benefits? Is an ability to have some level of control and awareness over your habitual reactions to stressful situations. So rather than just being an autopilot and sort of flipping my lid each time the taxi cuts me off in the traffic, I have a much better awareness of what's happening for me in that moment. I believe when I am sort of standing on a strong foundation of who I am as a person, I'm living into my core values. I've actually spent time figuring out what are my core values because they guide us through the dark. And if I'm not clear on my values and I'm not clear on the behaviors that support those values or the people that help me protect and live into those values, I kind of could be flailing around in the dark. I kind of think I've got values, but I'm not really sure what's fueling and firing me through my day, my work, my life, my relationships. So that's a key benefit. And I believe that when you're living into your values, you're showing up in a way that feels authentic, skillful, and very tangible to others. You should be able to name what your values are to your, those who you've built trust with or who are asking, and they should be able to go, yeah, I see that, because it's a light that's shining through you. So greater authenticity, I think increased humility and self-acceptance. So seeing ourselves as we really are, and you said this in your introduction, and I like to say, like, Goldilocks and the three bears the right size. The right size you. No bigger, inflated, superior, having to puff myself up, but also not smaller, making myself less than. My right size me. So you mentioned the word joy several times, and I don't know what your definition of that is, but I sense that if you're living in this way, you experience more inner freedom. This feeling of not necessarily being, brought to your knees each time something difficult happens or is disappointing or there's some kind of setback or failure. It's like you're able to work through that. I think there's another one. I'm sorry, I've got quite a long list here. Softening in our ego defenses and more living into our essential qualities. I know you've done a talk on the Enneagram and those different levels of awareness. And how do we start to live into the true essence of who we are? It's like the best of those core values I was speaking about versus being in the grips of our personality, which is often, really very uncomfortable for us and super painful for people who have to deal with us when we're in that big ego state.
That would be another whole podcast
By itself. And, other benefits I see is, an increased curiosity. And what's curiosity really? It's just about an ability to ask questions and think about the impact of that. If I'm asking more questions, not only about myself, but of others, what does that lead to? Deeper understanding, deeper connections, more authentic relationships, understanding what's going on for people, allowing them that time to really think through stuff. And, lastly, I'd say the big benefit of all of this is if you're invested to doing this work, it's growth, stretch, and innovation. Because I'm taking myself to my edges and beyond. If I'd lived into the story of, I'm burnt out, I'm clearly not coping with stress, I must just work harder. I must just, suck this all up, push these feelings down, ignore my body, and just keep going. I would not have been on what is now what 15, 16-year journey of learning. And that learning's one of my highest values. So that's what I love about it is because there's no end, as you say, until I get to, that awful moment where I'm, going into a casket. It's like there's always something we can learn, but are you curious about stuff? Curious about yourself, curious about what's happening in your business, in your community, in your family, in the world. I think there are lots of benefits there, and I'm happy to, jot them down. You can give it as a resource to you or to your listeners, but those are from my experience what some of the benefits are.
Well, you certainly sell the concept, I must say. There's a
Yeah.
few things in life that can give you that many benefits, just like that. So, yeah, it is, of course, a lifelong journey and it's not an easy one, but you certainly paid back for your efforts and investment. The return on investment is infinite, is what you're saying.
Yeah, and it's not a quick fix, and I know we would all love quick fixes. And to be honest, if somebody had told me back in my burnout bed that you got 16 years of heavy excavation to go, I would have said, oh no, thanks, I'll just keep going being unaware. But I wouldn't really, because it's led to so many beautiful experiences.
Thank you for that. And now I want to know from you if you can recommend some hacks for us. I mean, this sounds like it's worth having, but where to begin and how is what I'd love to share with the listeners.
Yeah, so again, just my experiences. Firstly, get clear on what is your view of yourself, this kind of right size view of yourself. For years, being somebody that's quite sort of driven, I like to accomplish stuff and get stuff done and do it quickly and efficiently and all those kind of things. I really saw myself as a project. You know, there's some, I've got to project manage my life and I've got to fix all these things that are not working. I've ditched that view of myself. And I rather, you know, I like to see myself rather as an ally. You know, there's an intimate partnership between myself, my body, my emotions, etc. And I feel then I'm in less a sort of aggressive conflict with those parts of myself. So one, I think just as part of that self-awareness is get clear on what's the view of yourself. How are you seeing yourself? And does that feel satisfactory to you? For me as well, I get clarity through time alone. And I know that's a luxury. And it's about really spending time with myself, doing the things which feed me. I can't expect my husband or my relationships to give me everything I need. I need to give myself what I need. So for me, you know, that's dancing, that's traveling, that's learning, it's pottering around in my garden. And part of that self-awareness piece, as you can see, I've said it a few times, is about, you know, doing courses, you know, reading books, listening to podcasts. And I'm not talking about that sort of mindless scrolling through Instagram. I'm sort of talking about what are those topics that you're really interested in. And for me, it's about how do I then teach that which I most need to learn. So why have I studied so much about everything we've been talking about? It's because I needed that most. I've done a lot of studying on self-compassion because I need that most. So I feel like to live into my core value of authenticity, I need to learn something, practice it myself, and then be able to offer it to other people, knowing that it's not easy. So, you know, find a way to really get clear around what is it that you love. And it might not have anything to do with the topics we're talking about here. It might be flower arranging for that moment, but gift yourself that because you will bring that energy into your workplace or anything else. On the self-exploration piece, I would say reality, check your assumptions. In our work with, you know, Brené and the Dare to Lead work, we have a saying, which is, what's the story I'm telling myself? You know, your boss says to you, you know, can I have 30 minutes with you later this afternoon? You might immediately, because it feels like a threat response, start running a story of, oh my God, clearly done something wrong. I know, you know, I understand there's retrenchments happening in another part of the business. Da, 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 da. I'm going to get retrenched. It's like, hold on, just breathe. Go in there with an open mind. What stories you're telling yourself? Under the course correction and the self-understanding piece, I said it earlier, invite feedback. Ask for it. And when people say to you, no, you're doing a great job, or no, that presentation you did was fine, ask them, would you mind telling me what was fine? What did I do that's good? So that people can also, you know, mirror you back to yourself. And on the self-compassion piece, like I said, it's how do you keep giving yourself this empathy U-turn? So speaking to and treating yourself like you would someone you deeply care about, with that warmth and genuine kindness, like a friend. And, you know, for me, it's been helpful in that arena to have an affirmation, a confirming positive statement that when I can feel myself getting a bit wobbly, I repeat it, you know, and I will share it here. It's, you know, I'm okay, you're okay, well, the other person's okay, and it will all be okay. I mean, it's such a simple one. And you might go, oh, that's naff, that doesn't work for me. Well, that's great, but it works for me. So I'm okay, you're okay, or he or she's okay, everything will be okay. This in that moment calms me down, and then I'm more likely to engage in a more skillful way with the situation that's causing me to feel that way. So I don't know, Sue, if that's life hacks, but it's kind of things that have worked for me. And you know, that's what I'd say is that people need to find what works for them and follow that path.
If I can share one that really helps me from a self-compassion perspective is to give myself affirmation sometimes and validation, which you know my natural style, if I leave it up to my ego mind, is to invalidate everything I do and say it's not good enough, it's not right enough, it's something's wrong with it, and to actually deliberately validate my efforts and my, you know, tell myself, wow, well done for trying so hard. You know, I try and I when I had my children were still small, I used to try and validate their efforts rather than their outcomes, and in order to build their self-esteem. And so I tried to do that to myself. You know, you tried really hard. You put so much of yourself into that. Well done. You know, and it feels phony in the beginning, but I must say, after doing it over and over again, it does start to become more comfortable and, you know, it raises less vulnerability. So, yeah, that's something. But thank you for those hacks, because it's really the how. You know, it's all very well to know what we should do, but to know how we should do it is so brings it home for us so that we can take something tangibly. And I really feel that you've offered our listeners some tangible stuff that they can take away and put to use in their own lives to build their well-being through personal mastery. So is there one last thing you'd love to offer as a sort of gift, a goodbye gift to us?
So I believe the greatest agent for change is self-awareness. Because without that awareness of what needs to change, what I want more of, what I want less of, you don't have a lot of impetus for next step action. You just stuck in an unconscious cycle. So I really encourage you to make a list of, you know, what do you love? What matters to you? What would you love more of? And what are you feeling is stopping you? This is a wonderful entry into self-awareness and exploring what's going on for me. And lastly, I'd say is we're really not alone in this. Is that so many of us are struggling with similar, you know, similar experiences, feelings, challenges, doubts, etc. So take comfort and courage knowing that you're probably not alone, and find that person. I say spaces, faces, and places that you can go to go, this is what's going on for me. What do you think? And if that person has got empathy and is honest, they'll probably go, gosh, me too. And then you feel connected and not alone. So I wish everybody, I don't wish people luck, I wish them courage.
Oh, thank you. And I really want to highlight the very first time I ever came to your home, so many years ago, I remember you gave me Brené Brown's book. I can't remember which of her books it was, Braving the Wilderness, maybe. And you gave it to me, you loaned it to me, and you said, you better give this back to me because it's precious to me. And there you were, how many years later, going to learn right out of her hand. So you certainly demonstrated courage. You certainly gave yourself the gift of giving yourself the greatest gift of all, the opportunity to live by your values and learn with your big hero. And so you have now shared some of that you gained back because of your courage with all of us. And that's why I really wanted to chat to you today on the podcast. And, you know, because I just see such authentic self-leadership coming out of you. And so thank you for being a shining live example of everything you've told us, and for living your life the way you do. And thank you for everything you've said, and for what we can take away from you today. It's really been a treat. And thank you, thank you, thank you.
Thank you, Sue. Thank you for having me on your platform, and it's really been an honor and a privilege to just share my story, and happy to come back anytime in the future. God knows we've got a lot of topics that we'd love to talk about. So thank you, and yeah, wishing you all the best.
Thank you. Take care, Jules.
Bye.
Bye, everyone. Thank you for listening. Bye for now.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Your Route to Wellbeing. I hope that this episode has been really useful and helpful for you. Thank you to the team who brought it into being and to our special guests who so generously gave of their time and their insights. Please remember to share it with all in your network who you think it can help. Sharing help that really helps is what makes the world go round.